What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. Today, he has been the leader of Zimbabwe for as long as there has been a Zimbabwe, after four decades, and having once vowed that only God would remove him, Robert Mugabe is out of power. Will he be remembered as a tyrant or a hero? It's Wednesday, November 22nd. Jeffrey, how did Robert Mugabe first come to power?
So Mugabe was a professional teacher who got swept up in the revolutionary spirit of the 1960s that was sweeping across Africa.
Jeffrey Gettleman was the Times East Africa bureau chief for more than a decade.
Most of Africa was decolonized in the 60s after decades of sometimes brutal colonial rule.
Black faces multiply as whites disappear. 3 years ago, there were 10,000 Europeans in Umtali. On New Year's Day, there were 3,000 less.
So the country that's Zimbabwe today used to be southern Rhodesia. And Rhodesia had been a colony of the British Empire. But in 1965, the whites in Rhodesia voted to separate and establish their own country. Mm-hmm. And this flew in the face of what was happening across Africa, where the British government and the French government were trying to grant independence to black African countries. And that began this liberation struggle of black Rhodesians against white Rhodesians.
Black politicians in the transitional government now have their own private armies. For 79, the recipe may be chaos. In the new year, Zimbabwe must surely be born, but only out of the blood and ashes of Rhodesia itself.
And it was in 1980 that the blacks won and they formed their own country, what is now Zimbabwe.
The triumph of Mr. Mugabe. It's all right for the Africans, but what about the whites?
I feel sick. That's all I can say.
Are you going to stay in Rhodesia?
I don't think so.
Where will you go?
I'd go to Britain, in spite of the weather.
I think it stinks, and the British stink with it because you've just given a victory to bloody Russia, you idiot.
Good evening from Salisbury. Mr. Mugabe's landslide victory here, with a total of 57 of the 100 seats, has left Rhodesia's white population fearful tonight.
And Mugabe was perfectly positioned in Zimbabwe to become a leader.
There was a time when the only way the Rhodesian Air Force would have carried Robert Mugabe was bound and handcuffed to the floor. Today, the same white pilots fly for the Zimbabwe Air Force, and the man they carry is now called Prime Minister.
He was one of the more educated people in his entire country. He was someone who had traveled a lot in different parts of Africa and had seen and tasted independent Africa before it arrived in Zimbabwe. He also had an interest in Marxist ideology and liberation theology, and all that amounted to this self-confidence and a really strong personality.
In a society where you have a class whose main purpose and accepted privilege is to exploit others, you naturally get revulsed if the majority of people are being oppressed, being exploited. You can't avoid, if you have any moral principles at all, the call to do something about it.
So it's 1980 and Zimbabwe has established itself. What is the promise that Mugabe has for Zimbabwe at this moment?
So Zimbabwe was born with great expectations.
What's Mr. Mugabe going to do for you?
Employment for my husband, better man for my husband, schools, clinics, peace,
I think that's it.
And I'm expecting big changes. We'll be having equal jobs, equal money, and everything like that. There will be no racial discrimination between people.
We should try to remember the time that we're talking about. So this is in the 1980s, and the whole world is galvanizing against South Africa because it's a white-led country that's oppressing its black majority. Zimbabwe was born right across the border at the same time. And so there was a lot of anti-white feeling in Southern Africa. But Mugabe didn't give the whites in Zimbabwe a hard time at first. He realized that they controlled the keys to the economy, and he needed them. And Zimbabwe's economy was really humming at the time. So he was very careful in keeping those relationships cordial. And that lasted up until about the mid-90s. And in the mid-90s, there was a plan where the British government was going to help pay for land redistribution.
The land must come. The land must come. The land must be in the hands of Zimbabweans.
Mugabe and others felt that it was unfair that there was a relatively small population of whites that was holding on to the best land.
I must warn you all that if government does not redistribute land in an orderly manner today, in a few years' time, the people themselves will see to it that they have distributed the land to themselves.
And so he had been promising the indigenous people that he would address that and that he wanted blacks to have more economic freedom and more economic power. And so in the 90s, he got serious about that. And the British government said, okay, we will fund you and we will give you hundreds of millions of dollars to get out of this inequality that existed from colonial times. They felt some responsibility for creating the system.
Mugabe doesn't want harmony between blacks and whites. He wants the whites to hate the blacks, and he wants the blacks to hate the whites.
But that process was mishandled, and there was a breakdown in trust.
How do you feel about your own future as a white farmer in this country?
I hope that the country will become peaceful and we can remain here and make a go of our farm that we've battled all these years to build up.
Do you believe it will?
Lately, I've had my doubts.
And the British government said that Mugabe was misspending the money and taking land away from people that were good farmers and giving it to his friends and not helping out the poor Zimbabweans who deserved it. And Mugabe accused the British government of going back on its commitments. And the whole thing turned sour really fast. And then
the white farmer has been the crudest of the whites in this country, the most backward in terms of the enlightenment and education.
They're all racist, you think?
Majority of them, not all of them. There's some very good ones.
He began to vilify whites in the country and to encourage blacks to invade white farms. And they began to do that across the country.
They are led by Chenjerai Hunzi, a messianic physician who likes to be called by his nom de guerre, which is Hitler. He says anyone who resists the farm takeovers will end up 6 feet under. President Mugabe is his organization's official patron.
He has your support.
Yes, of course.
Even though he likes to refer to himself as Hitler.
Of course. But what is in a name?
And the entire economy was greatly damaged by this because the reality was the whites were running the biggest commercial enterprises. And once they started to leave because they feared for their lives, the agricultural economy crashed. And Zimbabwe went in the span of a few years from this strong, impressive, harmonious place to a very bitter, divided country. And then Mugabe started playing with politics and suppressing the opposition. And that's when the resistance began to grow.
Has a disturbing report from Zimbabwe. In the troubled part of that country called Matabele Land, we found much evidence that government troops sent in to quell lawlessness have themselves committed wanton murder. What's more, Mr. Mugabe's government knew about it.
He used the military to crush opponents, and there were some horrible massacres where the Zimbabwean military, at his orders, went into certain ethnic areas and killed thousands of people.
In the bush, the bodies are left to rot, putrefying in the hot African sun.
others are burned in an attempt to destroy the evidence of the army atrocities. Yet more are covered with earth and branches or buried in shallow graves. In some villages, the air is heavy with the stench of death.
There's still a mystery of what exactly happened at that time, and it's been pretty well covered up. But he was brutal. He was like many sub-Saharan African leaders, that he wanted total control and brooked no dissent.
That seems to explain why Mugabe would behave the way he is. But I wonder how the people of the country experienced it if his promise was to liberate them from a kind of oppressive colonial power, only to replace it with a different kind of oppressive power.
It's different, though. There was apartheid in these countries. There was the certain restrictions of where people could live and who could vote and what type of rights you had based on the color of your skin. That no longer existed once he took over and Zimbabwe was an independent country. So he did deliver on liberation, and people were grateful for that. You know, that means a lot when you've been crushed and you've been humiliated by a foreign power to have somebody lift you out of that. And Mugabe did that. So it wasn't until very late in the mid-2000s that there was this turning of the tide and he was deeply unpopular.
I am the president of the Republic of Zimbabwe. And that is the reality everybody has to accept first and foremost.
And then he began to position his young second wife to take over power.
President Robert Mugabe's wife, Grace, is now head of the party's Women's League.
It is indeed a great honor, not only for me personally, but also for my family.
And I think that became the last straw.
Grace Mugabe has unveiled herself, availed herself for deputy president of the party, a move that will see her succeed Mugabe as president of the country.
That ruffled the feathers of a lot of veterans of the liberation movement who had stood by Mugabe's side for decades and had put up with his excesses and had covered for him when his policies failed and had remained loyal to him. And this was just deemed too much to swallow because Grace was greatly underqualified. She doesn't have any roots in the liberation movement. And she had zero qualifications.
Known as Gucci Grace for her lavish shopping sprees and flamboyant fashion choices, she was Mugabe's secretary before entering politics 2 years ago.
She had almost no support, and that's what prompted this move against Mugabe. The fear was that he was going to die soon, and she was going to take over. And these military chiefs and leaders within Mugabe's political party did not want that to happen. And that's why they moved against him.
So it sounds like these people around Mugabe in the government who do not trust Grace Mugabe to lead stage a kind of coup. How does it go down?
We're following new political turmoil in Zimbabwe, where signs of a military coup are becoming clearer.
The security chiefs and top party leaders decided that the only way to stop her from becoming the next president was to arrest Mugabe and take him out of power.
Nobody is officially calling this a coup, including the military leaders believed to be behind it, but it certainly has all the hallmarks of one.
And over the last few weeks, they began to plot that. And in the last week, they executed it.
Zimbabwean Defense Force tanks rolled into the nation's capital, Harare, overnight, ramping up fears that a coup was imminent.
And they seized Mugabe, put him under house arrest, did not allow him to communicate, and basically told him he had no choice but to abdicate his authority and to resign.
The military took control of the state broadcaster and had this to say.
We wish to make it abundantly clear that this is not a military takeover of government.
In a way, it was a peaceful coup. Because Zimbabwe has been so tightly controlled, the army was able, in one swift blow, to change the course of the country and to incapacitate Mugabe and his wife.
What the Zimbabwe Defense Forces is doing is to pacify a degenerating political, social, and economic situation in our country, which, if not addressed, may result in a violent conflict.
Today, he must go today, not tomorrow.
want him to go today.
What happens after Mugabe is placed under house arrest? Does he stay there?
So once Mugabe was placed under house arrest, he had no options. He was held under armed guard by a unified military that was firmly against him. I think the question among them was, should we allow him some dignity or should we just strip him of all of his powers? Mm-hmm. And the decision was to strip him of all of his powers and make him publicly resign, which he did today.
Just have a listen to the moment that that letter of resignation was read out in the Parliament of Zimbabwe. So cheers in Parliament, cheers out here on the streets as soon as the news filtered out to people here in Harare.
And now the question is, what's going to happen? Mm-hmm. Is there a place for him to stay in Zimbabwe, or does he go into exile like so many other African dictators have?
Right.
There's very few African dictators that are alive in their countries after they lose power.
Jeffrey, of all the leaders in Africa, Mugabe is the name we all know and recognize. Why do you think that is?
Well, Mugabe represented something very specific, which was fighting against white power and fighting for the rights and the dignity of poor Africans against colonial powers. And he did that. And I think that's why he's such an iconic figure. It's because he lived and breathed and acted that out for decades. That same very strident, self-confident, militant ideology that the blacks in Africa should rise up against the whites. And there were few places where that was so lived as Zimbabwe. But in the end, his legacy is going to be mixed because he ran his country into the ground and he will be remembered as both a hero and as a tyrant.
Jeffrey Gettleman, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
On Tuesday, crowds gathered outside of Parliament in the capital city of Harare, where lawmakers had met to begin impeachment proceedings against Mugabe. One man shared a message for Mugabe with the Times. "Go and rest now, our father. We still love you, but we're happy today. We're hoping now for a better future." We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at the New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to the New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Here's what else you need to know today.
And I do have to say, 40 years is a long time. He's run 8 races, and this has never come up. So 40 years is a long time.
President Trump has finally weighed in on the allegations that Roy Moore, the Republican Senate nominee in Alabama, repeatedly groped and forcibly kissed women as young as 14.
Well, he denies it. Look, he denies it. I mean, if you look at what is really going on and you look at all the things that have happened over the last 48 hours, he totally denies it. He says it didn't happen. And, you know, you have to listen to him also. You're talking about...
Standing outside the White House on Tuesday, as he prepared to travel to Mar-a-Lago for Thanksgiving, Trump discouraged his supporters against voting for Moore's Democratic opponent, Doug Jones, in next month's special election.
I can tell you one thing for sure. We don't need a liberal person in there, a Democrat, Jones. I've looked at his record. It's terrible in crime. It's terrible in the border. It's terrible in the military.
Trump, who has himself been accused of groping women, was asked about the growing number of sexual harassment allegations being made against powerful men in American life.
Women are very special. I think it's a very special time because a lot of things are coming out, and I think that's good for our society, and I think it's very, very good for women. And I'm very happy a lot of these things are coming out, and I'm very happy it's being exposed.
And on Tuesday, the Federal Communications Commission announced a plan that gives broad power to internet providers to determine the websites and online services that their customers can see and use. The plan would allow providers like Comcast, Verizon, and AT&T to block websites they don't like and charge web companies like Netflix for faster delivery of their content. It's a reversal of so-called net neutrality rules put in place under President Obama and is one of President Trump's most significant deregulatory efforts since taking office. In a statement, the chairman of the FCC said, quote, "Under my proposal, the federal government will stop micromanaging the internet." That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. We're taking the rest of the week off for Thanksgiving. See you Monday.